The medium is the message, body makes a dance. Love is the product, the joke is in, the joke is in, the joke is in your face.
I'm Martin Sirius, and this is my show.
Natural disasters, and eventually the end of the world.
Are you serious?
I used to pick up this really great hip-hop show from Stanford on my radio on Friday nights, and one night they were playing all this amazing, crazy, surrealistic shit, and I thought it was like a whole new genre of hip-hop, but it turned out it was all stuff produced by Dan the Automator Nakamura, and they were doing a tribute to him. And Dan the Automator also produced the Gorillaz' first album, and he's responsible for putting together musical projects like Handsome Boy Modeling School and some of the stuff I was probably hearing that night, like Dr. Octagon, Deltron 3030, that is, with Del the Funky Homo Sapien, and some of his own stuff. And Dan the Automator Nakamura will be with us on the show today. And I look over to my right. I see Jeff Deal swilling down a beer and giving me the heavy metal salute. And I'm shocked, just shocked, to see that Steve Robles and Diana Brown both couldn't make it.
Back into rehab together.
Back into rehab together. So the rumors.
It's the thing to do lately.
So the rumors go. But the brave and generous Lisa Ryan agreed to come in here and join us to help interview Dan the Automator.
Happy to be here.
And welcome, Lisa.
Hey, thanks a lot. So I came in to talk a little bit, too, about the subject that nobody kind of wants to talk about on the news anyway, which is election fraud and what happened in the 2000, the 2002, and now the 2004 elections, and how we're all sort of have just been watching with disbelief every year as a large number of people are disenfranchised, votes that just don't count, exit polls that have never been wrong before for 30 years all of a sudden wrong, and crazy stuff like that. And so I just want to talk about it with you guys a little bit. It's real easy to just sort of decide, well, what's the point of even voting?
Something I've done several times.
Yeah, are you serious? One person who will run for president one year and then
not even vote for himself
the next. Yeah. Right.
I take them as they come, you know. Sometimes I do and sometimes I don't, but that do continue.
Yeah, timing is everything. Insiders have it that for the races, the key races that the Republicans lose, they are already planning a contingency plan of suing
martial law.
That's if we get to vote at all, they might do that. But let's say we vote and they lose,
challenging every outcome
on the grounds of election fraud.
Oh, so yeah, they're so clever that way. They pick up on everything. And
if Foley can be a Democrat, everything's up for grabs.
But like in 2000, we had hardly any of these machines, right?
Right,
and but the machines themselves are causing a potential for fraud.
No, there's a mix. I mean, there's the disenfranchisement of mostly African Americans, actually. That's pretty blatant. That's just
making it
hard for people to vote impossible.
Yeah, and in Ohio, you see footage of people waiting all day in the rain to vote. There being like two machines to serve hundreds of people in all the largely Republican and upper class districts. They had plenty of machines for everyone. And actually, so it was after the fiasco in 2000 that the Help Americans Vote Act passed. The guy who passed it, by the way, or helped to write it, he was it's Representative Bob Ney of Ohio, and he was already a well-known lobbyist for Diebold. He also has connections to Jack Abramoff.
So, I mean, is this like a technological escalation of something that has always gone on? Because I was watching Bill Maher on the weekend that he had Chris Matthews on, and Matthews saying, oh, this happens all the time. Everybody tries to steal elections at the district level. The Democrats have always done it, and, you know, everybody does it.
And there's gerrymandering, which itself is nothing but a technical way to try to steal
elections. I do think it's
a
question of scale, but it's also, I guess, a question of technology as well.
Well, yeah, and it's also a question of sort of taking everything that we know about security and computers and throwing it out the window when it has to do with these electronic voting machines that are so critical. It's sort of the most critical situation where transparency and security would be more important than ever.
This is what I wanted to get into, because
totally disregarded.
I think we should be able to have better elections, cleaner elections, as a result of by using encryption and so forth. Do you think that's the case?
Well, you would use encryption, but the point is with any good security system, the whole point is that the source code is available to the public so that everybody can hammer on it and make it better all the time. And with this, the source code is supposed to be a trade secret, and so no one can see it but the company
owned by a man who campaigns for Bush and said he would do anything to make sure.
Exactly. He did that. And also Ken Blackwell, who's now running for governor of Ohio, who was basically the Catherine Harris of the Ohio elections in 2004, who bought a bunch of
guns. Really
he wears
big tits.
As much. Yeah, I was going to say not as much makeup.
Nowhere near as much makeup. Catherine Harris jabs all at once. There's just so many there.
Yeah, overlap there, I guess. Yeah.
And he just lately.
Okay, so Jeff did the tits and I did the makeup.
That's right.
Just to clarify.
That's right. Yeah. There's so much. And she just, you know, and it really boggles the mind. Ken Blackwell was able to do what he did. And then he bought
Isn't
a bunch of Diebold stock.
Isn't he the list of the 10 worst dressed people?
Worst dressed people?
Blackwell, isn't that Ken Blackwell? Sorry.
I'm not sure, because generally the Republicans have pretty good suits, if you've noticed lately. Their suits isn't one thing you can really give them a hard time about. They got the good suits.
Yeah, well-tailored,
Well-tailored, yes.
Here's my question about all this. I can only imagine that the statistical margin for error in a regular election, even before the voting machines and the 2000 fiasco, had to have been greater than what we accomplished now with public opinion polls. And if that's the case, if somebody does a study and finds out that actually the margin for error is statistically better with public opinion polls, what do we even need popular elections for? Let's just have public opinion polls to decide all this. Ooh, well, you don't like that idea.
That's interesting. Well, there's just so many gray areas.
You succeeded
several
in confusing
levels,
us all.
Several levels of that argument. I'm not sure sort of where to begin. It was my understanding that the Zogby polls, which is the only sort of reputable poll that I know to, you know, use as an example that were there and the different things, have never been plus or minus, I think the worst was 4%.
Yeah.
I think it can be as much as 4% off or something
So you're making Jeff's point. Basically, go out, do an opinion poll, save lots of bucks.
But the fact that we're even talking about a new system that would use the same system that the Zogby poll uses just shows how it's commonly accepted that the Zogby polls aren't wrong. And we're supposed to believe that the Zogby polls were wrong in 2002. No, it'll actually be the third time we were expected to believe it. And it'll be a fourth time if we're expected to believe it this time.
All right, so Lisa, we've got to get out of this conversation
somehow.
So give us a quick suggestion on what we do.
A quick suggestion. Well, think of yourself as the reporter at large. When you go to vote, I would take notes, I would take pictures, I would talk to the people around you. And if anybody tells you that voting for Democrats is happening on Wednesday instead of Tuesday, don't believe it.
We're here with Dan the Automator Nakamura, one of the most groundbreaking and inventive creators of hip-hop. It all started in 1996 with Dr. Octagon, which I think is still my personal favorite, actually.
Oh, thank you.
It's way out there, and so am I, some would say. He then created Handsome Boy Modeling School with Prince Paul, Deltron 3030 with Del, the funky Homo sapien. Long been a fan of his as well. And he produced the first Gorillaz album in 2001, and he's got a new project, etc. with him, NBA 2K7. It features Mos Def, E-40, Fabulous, Ghostface, A Tribe Called Quest, and many others. And let's not forget that he also did something with Beck. And we mustn't forget that.
Okay.
And So before we talk too much about your career, something I've been wondering, as somebody who watches MTV, is why do you think Damon Albarn is so happy about having sunshine in a bag? Any thoughts on that?
You know, I'm not really sure exactly. That was an interesting one because with that particular song, we had gone through a whole slew of various lyrics to
get
there.
Did you really? Such a cool song.
Yeah, the way we would work is we create melodics and timing, kind of like, and then words would come last. So they went through several.
So it's just kind of what fit into the space on some level, and yet very. Very
well, no, I mean, he's
evocative.
A really brilliant songwriter.
He is,
just his method is...
And Del is a brilliant rapper.
Absolutely. Yeah, Del's my favorite. Actually, new Deltron record coming.
Do you really?
Probably. Well, we're going to be probably done recording it next by December, maybe the end of December, so sometime next year.
Cool. Excellent. And in general, I mean, for all along, you've been working with almost like these infinite options in terms of the sounds that you might use. And so you might have like some really corny bit of advertising, and you mix in avant-garde jazz and classical and, you know, hard rock and everything else, you know. And is there some method that you have for figuring out what's appropriate to a particular artist or a particular song? Is it entirely intuitive? Do you have a big database of material?
Well, for me personally, it's like I'm a big fan of music, and all the types of music you've mentioned,
right.
I listen to. I'm pretty much not so much into modern R&B and modern country so much, and modern jazz to a good degree.
Right.
But everything else, old country, old R&B, old jazz, and even pop music from old days to now. I'm a big fan of all that stuff. So I hear things that I feel like music in general, it's like certain people don't really pay attention to categorizing it, and other people pay a lot of attention to it. And like,
right.
I've kind of just followed people that had more eclectic influences, I guess. So when it comes to making records for myself, I guess I don't look at it so much as like, oh, this is a jazz kind of thing, or this is a rock kind of thing, or whatever. I just go, this will sound good, or I think this will sound good, and that's kind of how it ends up happening.
That's cool. I mean, you were sort of, in some ways, right on the forefront of this thing where everybody was oriented toward genres. Everything had to fit a genre up until like a certain point. And then suddenly people started mixing them all up, which was a great relief because it just gets so tiresome.
I tend to agree. I think, like I was saying, it's like I come from a regular music background as far as like I know how to read and write music, but way in the past, that's not what I base my life.
Right, you studied violin.
Yes, since I was like 3 years old, really.
Right.
So I have that background, but like for me with music, I was influenced a lot by the early stages of hip hop. In hip hop, you have like guys like Run DMC, they're rhyming over rock beats or something, or really electronic beats, or you have another group like the Tribe Called Quest over jazz beats, or another, you know, over James Brown. So like all these people using all these different kinds of music, and that's how hip hop was originally, a lot of it was made that way, you know, from sampling or from film programming.
Yeah.
So like growing up in that music and listening to all the different kinds of music, I found other things I liked about the music as well. So my background may have been originally more hip-hop, R&B, and pop music, and classical, but then like listening to all these other jazz records to see how records were made, I got really into
it. It's really true that hip-hop was really sort of the first sort of form that was very liberal about its use of all kinds of other things and putting it into the mix.
I mean, you know, like just with Run DMC, like they had stuff over the Monkees, the old Monkees records, or over the Knack, or like you know, and over like Aerosmith, and all these things that like they don't really have much to do with each other in particular, but it gets unified by the sound. And I'm not saying that you have to unify the sound, but the idea that a lot of different things can be brought to a different end just appealed to me, I guess.
You know, I wanted to ask you, donated a track to the Creative Commons, relaxation spa treatment. What was the process like for developing that track and having that done?
I made that track because first of all, the Creative Commons thing, the whole idea was to give music that people could freely use and license, because part of what's going on right now in music, and especially in regards to sampling, which is sampling taking little bits of other songs, is it's become a very expensive endeavor. I don't mind the fact that it's an expensive endeavor because, you know, if you're using someone else's work, you should pay for it. That's my personal opinion. You know, if they don't want you to use it, that's their business. You know what I mean? That's okay. But on the other side of the thing is, like, I work with this kid, like, a guy named Shadow, Josh, who, like, we made really interesting records. Well, he made, I helped. But, like, you know, like, introducing all these things, which you could never do at this juncture in time because it's too expensive to. It's like music right. concrete, but it can't exist because of. I mean, it can exist on a purely intellectual level where you're not selling it, I suppose. But like right. you know, you couldn't bring it out there and do it, so you're losing the form of music. So I felt like I'd like to at least contribute to that side of things, where like if people do want to use something or chop it up, there's something that they can do. Because I feel like as an art form, you'll find like it won't be able to be progressed. And then even if that's not the final product, the thought that goes behind that kind of stuff can bring out new ideas that bring out more different kinds of music. And I just hate to see that whole thing go away. I mean, with the internet and everything nowadays, where people can do stuff on a more personal basis and like not trying to sell it so much, there's less, not that there's less legal ramifications, but people aren't going to bother if some guy's just putting something on his website. So
and don't most artists sympathize with that viewpoint? I mean, isn't the copyright law now mostly protecting the record companies or labels, the corporations who want to protect the stuff?
Well, it's a little bit of everything, you know, because ultimately, like I said, if you made a song and you didn't want someone else using it, that's your business. You know what I mean?
Sure,
I mean, it's a very fundamental principle to me that I respect that particular aspect.
But that's kind of an old school mentality, right?
See, I would say that, I mean, as a writer, I've also been a musician, but mostly I was a writer. Like if somebody quotes a couple of paragraphs of mine in the context of something larger, then I don't really have the right to say anything about it. I mean, all literature and, you know, all writing is.
But would you want to? The question.
But you would want.
Would you have a problem?
Maybe
with it?
Might want attribution for that, just to at least if it was your couple of paragraphs.
Oh, if they pretended it was their own, I suppose that could be a point.
Exactly,
so that's the issue, really.
And the other thing is it's even more literal when it's a recording, because it could be the guy's voice. I mean, maybe you don't want to lend his voice to this project, you know? Or,
right. Sure.
And so I respect that side of it, but what
I think the
Blue Angels.
The Blue Angels.
They respect it too.
What can you mix in with the sound of? The
sound of the jet.
Sonic.
Yeah. But I mean, so like I have to like say I regret the idea that you won't see records like Introducing or something because of that, or like the Beastie Boys like Paul's Boutique, because you won't see.
Right.
It costs
it becomes
so
much
too
more
expensive
difficult.
To do. But so I'd like to see people who can contribute to things that people can use and chop up and change around. I mean, anytime people sample me, I can't just clear it myself, because sometimes it's through a label and that it has to be that.
Right.
But I always clear my side of it if it's possible, because I feel like, I mean, obviously it's the same thing like if you use like music and advertising. I don't really want to say advertise cigarettes or something like that, but pretty much anything else, I feel like it's okay, because you're still bringing music out. And the same way in someone using the music in a song, if they're doing a negative point of view, maybe I'm not so into it.
Right.
I mean, but I'm not going to get very specific about it, because in general, I want people to have the ability to do something like that, you know?
What do you think about, in this context, what do you think about mashups? Have you had any of your songs used in...
Yeah, I've heard a few things here and there.
Yeah.
I come from a DJing background as well, and way before we were making records, we were doing that all the time. So
sure,
to me, it's not really
people do it live. Yeah,
but I'm from San Francisco. I mean, we've been mixing all sorts of different music for years together. I mean, and obviously it was part of the background that allowed me to, you know, get familiar with different kinds of music. So I don't find it to be refreshingly new, if you understand what I'm saying. But I'm glad people do it. But I kind of think the way people do it, sometimes it's more for the idea of what it is than actually the sound of what comes out of it. And I don't really enjoy those as much. I like
the gimmick of taking two song titles that have the same word. And
exactly.
Like Oasis versus Green Day and that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Let's take a break and hear something from this new CD that you brought with us. Tell us for a moment a little bit about what this project is and what we'll hear.
Okay, well, first of all, this project is called 2K7. It is a...
It's appropriate that we have sound effects while you're here.
It's like a mashup.
Out of this world.
Yeah, live mashup.
But what this is it's a soundtrack for a new video game, and the NBA's video game, basketball.
Right. Yeah.
And what I did with this was I picked various artists that like represent various styles of hip-hop and various styles of regional rap to do this. Yeah. I mean, everyone from like pop New York to underground New York to like the South, the Midwest, West Coast, you know, backpack, real flossy, just because I wanted to give the show the variation that eclectic nature that is the United States, because in relation to basketball, it's like not everyone's doing one thing. To that end, though, since we are in the Bay Area today, and you know, I feel like we should probably play this track. It's from E-40 in San Quinn to Bay Area I guess they're natives. I don't know if they're actually from here, but they're natives as far as I'm concerned. Sure. They've been here forever. And the song's called Baller Blocking.
Are you serious?
Baller Block, Baller Block. Competition is none.
I'm a Bay Area player, can't be like me.
Baller Block, Baller Block. Competition is none.
Play your heart out, you do your heart, I go home.
Check it out. Golden State Warrior, on the floor with ya, gonna score on ya, whole team top performers. LA Lakers, fast breakers, last second shot makers, championship takers. Phoenix Suns, hot as the sun, up close and personal, professional ones. Who does it like the Nuggets for the city of Denver? This is the NBA, you must remember. Dallas Mavericks work magic, run up the score. Everybody on defense and going for boards. San Antonio Spurs, having with a loss of words. Shock and amaze, defenders deferred. Supersonics in Seattle, tough place to visit. You better play hard, cause they love to win it. Trailblazing in Portland, stealing, dunking, and scoring. So wet from three, like the rain is pouring. San Quinn, the Frisco G. Bay Area player, can't be like me. Get hypey on the track, so much stamina. Shine bright for the lights, smile for the camera. I'm a guard, I'm a center. I'm a forward when I enter the game on the sticks, and I win with splendor.
Baller Block, Baller Block.
I'm the sole survivor. Your score is high, but my score is higher.
Is none.
I'm the sole survivor. Your score is high, but my score is higher.
Baller Block, Baller Block.
I'm the sole survivor. Your score was high, but my score was higher.
Quinn, it's E-40, mate. Let me get at him, player.
Ooh.
When it comes to this player, he ain't nobody puffin' fear. Gotta have heart and have yaper. Let your presence be known here. Earth is my turf, up and down them basketball courts. Sometimes I get because of the way I wear my shorts. Never reckon just hitting and scoring me and my click. We got handles, reach offs, man. You'll get shook like a pit. Ball to refall and stand off like Boston Tycoon for y'all. Pop my collar and dust myself off. I'm flying, I'm raw. Ooh. Let the games begin, player. Yes, sir, let's let it be known. Better play your heart out. Either go hard or go home. Aggressive, selective in the paint. I'm kinda hype. Far from a marshmallow, what I ain't, don't take me light. I'm the gospel, I'm solid, I'm the truth. I play for keep. I play try to duck and get swatted if you feel froggish, leap. I'm nowhere near soft as baby cotton. No goaltend, goaltend. Or baller block.
Or baller block.
Ooh.
I'm the sole survivor. Your score is high, but my score is higher.
Is none.
I'm the sole survivor. Your score is high, but my score is higher.
Baller Block, Baller Block.
I'm the sole survivor. Your score was high, but my score was higher.
Competition is none.
I'm the sole survivor. Your score is high, but my score is higher.
Baller Block, Baller Block.
Shout out Jay Rich, Tim Duncan, Kobe Bryant, Carmelo Anthony. You get what I'm saying? Elton Brand, Amari Stoudemire, Ray Allen.
You seem to work entirely in terms of projects rather than like trying to develop a solo career or like forming a band. You do have a Handsome Boy Modeling School, which I guess there's rumors that you guys are breaking up. Or I don't. For all I know, it could all be you. In which case, it would be hard to break up. Although I remember people used to say that Bob Dylan is getting back together again. So, do you ever get the desire to sort of focus on like one thing, focus on your solo career, or form like one coalition? I think
for me personally, it's like there's one big flaw in that theory in general, is I can't sing and I can't rhyme and I like vocals. So
you have to collaborate.
Yeah. I mean. Not only can I not sing, I don't want to sing. You know what I mean? It's not like I want to sit home and practice until I get this perfect. I'm really not interested in singing, but I'm interested in the collaborative process, and I like working with a variety of people because that allows me to try new things. And you know, like someone could be like a hardcore rapper, someone could be a beautiful female voice, a rock and roll guy, a soul guy, whatever. I can try things out. I mean, I'm not into so much. holding it all down to one thing, because I feel like it's more interesting to just try all the different stuff.
Cool. And do you relate yourself in any way to sort of the idea of the great producer, like there was Phil Spector, and then Brian Eno. I think you've been compared to his work. He's done some wonderful stuff. Do you see yourself in somewhere in that?
Well, I mean, I think they're operating on a higher level than I am so far. But
very humble. You've done some great stuff.
Oh, thank you. But right. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is, like, to me, I feel like I'm still learning stuff all the time, and I kind of like. The analogy I would use is it's kind of like a staircase, a really steep staircase. It's like you can't really see a few layers ahead of you until you climb up a few, and then you realize there's that much further to go. And every time I learn something new, I look up and realize, wow, there's a whole lot more things up there, and then I don't even see the next level of things up there. And then I learn those things, and I'm like, so I think there's a long way to go.
So do you have trouble like listening to the stuff that you've done in the past because you feel like it could have been better? Or
well, I always feel like everything could have been better, but. There's another thing involved, which is like the ability to let go. I feel like records, movies, whatever it is, they're a snapshot in your development and in your life. So like I could be working on the same record I started on. Like I could be still working on, I don't know, Dr. Octagon right now. And it'd probably be a little bit more honed in than the first one was. But like a lot of years have passed and a lot of, you know, sometimes it has to go out there and live its life.
Because theoretically you could just continue to work on some project forever. You could just like software, you could release versions.
Exactly.
You know? That's true. That would be a cool thing.
That's a little strange, but yes. But I feel like the edges are what make things interesting, because it just shows where you are at the time, you know, because the development. And plus also, it's like if you ever listen to some of these bigger budget bands as they were more, I'm going to use U2 as an example, is where it gets more polished as time goes on, and maybe you like the more polished version, maybe you like the rawer version, but either way, I think it's more interesting to hear the fact that there was all these developments as opposed to just the one thing after all the years of, it's like, you know, I don't know, whatever, the sand beating down the rock till it becomes smooth, you know, it's like.
Sure, and some of that earlier stuff has its peculiar charm.
I mean, I don't listen to my records mainly because, you know, you hear them like 10,000 times before they come out.
They'll make you crazy.
Right.
You choose some great surrealistic lyrics. Do you have lyricists? Did you always have an affinity towards that?
Yes.
Dell, and who was the guy? I'm spacing out here, but you have always worked with people who.
Yeah, I love. It's like, to me, it's like the poetry part to me. You know, it's like people who can put together words really. It's funny because I work with a lot of people who have, alternate ways of thinking, I guess, and they find the most profound and most interesting ways of putting together lyrics, you know, and
absolutely.
It's really enjoyable to me.
Speaking of people who do interesting lyrics, you've done, I guess, a little bit of work with Beck. Are you going to be doing any more stuff with him?
Hopefully. I mean, you know, we're friends. We've known each other. Man, I guess we're getting old. It's been about 10 years now, you know. It's like,
all right.
Basically, my thing is I don't like to get involved with people's politics of labels, whatever.
Right.
I just kind of, as things flow along and they get together, I don't chase people down. I just, you know, so not so much when they come to me or whatever, but like when our paths cross and like the time seems right, we do things. You know what I mean? I'm kind of like, I really don't like the business of making records. I just like making music. And obviously I want to sell records and, you know, continue to be able to do that and not work at 7-Eleven or something. But by the same token...
Wow. Holy crap. They just nuked the Laura Haight.
I mean...
Military.
My goal is to actually have a ton of people around that like I enjoy, not around with me like a cult, but I mean just like that I know in this world that like we can always like I'm like some people I work with on the first hand supply, like Roisin Murphy from the first Moloko record. You know, we haven't done a whole lot of songs between the last 8 years or seven, no, maybe not that long, 6 years, but like we're going to try to get back together and do something. We've been friends all along. You know what I'm saying? Like that kind of thing.
Right,
just like, you know, as things come along.
Just kind of let flow in and out of
you know, it's like,
various projects.
It's more like I don't want to put it on anybody to go, we have to do this, or they're going like, we have to do this. And of course, sometimes there are deadlines and there are records that need to be made for those kind of reasons that I do end up doing. And I'm not saying I don't like that. I'm just saying that I don't really know what's coming next. And I don't really focus in on one thing in that respect. I'm more like what feels right at the time.
Back when I was younger and hipper, going out to shows more, the Digital Underground was going around, and then Invisible Scratch Pickles. And yes. Were those influences for you? That
well, I grew actually, yes. I mean, I did a lot of, I did some shows with the Underground back then. I know those guys for a long time. I actually, last time I seen them was in Australia, half a year ago. But
they don't get as much credit as I think they should.
Oh no, they're very important in the scene here. But I mean, as it's a lot of the Bay Area is very important in that respect. And the Scratch Pickles, obviously. I mean, me and Q-Bert go back to high school. He's the DJ on the Octagon record. And,
oh, yeah. Did you have anything to do with Q-Bert's movie?
I'm probably in there for a brief second.
That was such a crazy movie.
But I mean,
that wasn't about anything. It was just like about going to the dentist.
Yeah,
but it was
dentist. I mean, Q's one of my not oldest friends in the world, but oldest friends in music. I mean, we've probably known each other since the 80s. You know what I mean? And like, basically, when we were both starting to DJ and do all that kind of stuff, I actually met him through DJing and. He actually pretty much convinced me I shouldn't be a DJ just by watching him. I mean, he was so amazing that.
Oh, and this
was
yeah.
What happened actually was I was playing this party in Stockton many years ago, and he came on and played, and it was like a little DJ battle. This was before DJ battles were a thing or whatever. It was him versus the other kid. And I didn't know either one of these kids, and they're both amazing. And I'm like, okay, I'm not that good. But then it turns out one's Q-Bert and the other one's Mixmaster Mike. And like, I'm like, okay. In retrospect, I can look back and go, okay, well, those are two of the best DJs in the world. No wonder I wasn't that good. But at the time, I'm like, these are just two other kids that are from the neighborhood kind of vibe. Right. I'm like, yeah, maybe this isn't for me. And I probably worked harder on beats from that day forward. I mean, not specifically, but like you could see. I could see the writing on the wall at some point. Yeah.
How to discourage a DJ in 2.5 seconds.
Exactly.
Let's hear another cut from the new one. What would you like us to play?
Well, I mean, you know, and not to... Let's see. We'll get out of the Bay Area just to keep the thing moving. All right. There is a great Hieroglyphic song on here, by the way, I do love. But I think we're going to go... Oh, here's one. Midwest in L.A. We have Lupe Fiasco is a new kid out of Chicago, and Evidence from Dilated People is a perennial L.A. kind of group, and they have a song called Catch Me.
Are you serious?
If y'all don't know me out there, I go by the name of Lupe.
That's right, man. That's right.
Fiasco. And I'm from a little city in the Midwest.
You gotta love that, man.
Y'all might have heard of it. It's called Chicago, man. I'm ballin', catch me, I'm ballin', catch me like Spalding, catch me like Spalding. PMD, DMC, vitamin like GNC. Can't see me like B.I.G. on CMT. Did a little bit of time on BMG. But this right here, homie, this all me. Can you be down? No, CMB, that's cold, that ain't nice, G. So what though? Lil' homie, remind me of Ice-T. By the way, we share the same birthday. The wordplay is work, but beeping is easy. So catch me, I'm ballin'. I'm sick too. If you ain't catch me like coughing back when I said you should catch me like Spalding. It's cool, cause most cats that I bump into can't catch me that often. Most times I just end up falling. Ball for a few, then end up walking. Catch me in the ball with a Cinderella waltzing. And I do it till it's no longer exclusive. Might go once, might go twice, but never three times like I always. To it. See, I walk into it, I do my thing, then tell the owner that it's cool to let y'all into it. Catch me, I'm ballin', catch me, I'm ballin', catch me like Spalding, catch me like Spalding. PMD, DMC, vitamin like GNC. Lupe? Yeah, catch me, I'm ballin', catch me, I'm ballin', catch me like Spalding, catch me like Spalding. ABB to ALC, man, we stay on a JOP. Yeah, put me on some EV to the TOP. Did a little bit of time on CAP. This right here, dog, there is no fee to get me down. If I don't really feel your speed, see, I never trust them. Catch me, I'm ballin'. Tailor-made custom, must be I'm all in. Still want it like worst come to worst, to the point where I never call myself OG. Yeah, I end games, never go OT. And if so, time's up like OC. And if not, then wasn't my calling. Catch me like Spalding, catch me like Spalding. Rest in peace to my... Cali Gold Rush is here, we never stalling. Fall goes down and still get fouled. Understand, man, that's how we're supposed to be. Yeah. Catch me, I'm balling. Catch me, I'm balling. Catch me like Spalding. Catch me like Spalding. PMD, DMC, vitamin like GNC. Lupe. Catch me,
catch me, I'm ballin'. Catch me like Spalding, catch me like Spalding. ABB to ALC, man, we stay on a J-O-B, yeah.
We make our name known, baby. It's going down worldwide, we right here. And you know, I rep my crew to the fullest. Babu, Rocker, Alchemist, everybody. And I feel like every time I step to the plate, it ain't for me, man, it's for everybody. It's for everybody I rep, man. I came up under two things: the original and no selling out, man. That's what I'm holding to today, man. What?
Back with Dan the Automator, and the Blue Angels have just flown by, and hopefully they won't return.
Game.
I was looking at your MySpace page, and you had a whole bunch of influences on there.
Okay.
Oh, now they're taking out the drill.
Sounds like a circular saw.
A circular saw is coming out.
I gotta say, though, it's a really nice view, like incredible windows.
Yeah, it's
right
wonderful.
There.
That is true. Yeah, we do have a gorgeous view here. I guess we should let our guests actually look out at the city. Instead, they have to stare at my ugly mug. Anyway, I enjoyed your list of influences. I wanted to just throw out a couple of them
because
they were amusing and interesting. The Bee Gees.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
say what you love about the Bee Gees.
Well, I mean, I was a little young when Saturday Night Fever came out, which is probably the epitome of their career. But, like, as I listened to those songs over time, I mean, people kind of look down on them for a couple of reasons. It was disco and there was a lot of falsetto involved.
Right.
But I'm telling you like it is, you know? But like, but as far as songwriting goes and just purely like the energy that they brought out in that period, I mean, they put a stamp on the whole 70s, but it's partially because of disco, obviously, but also partially because they were great songs that just keep going time after time.
Right.
And it's funny, it's because this will also be corny, but like if you ever saw that movie Staying Alive, the second movie, which is way after the fact,
Staying
and really
Alive Part 2.
Yeah, it really not happening as far as like it wasn't a big influence like Saturday Night Fever, but like he ends the song with like ends the movie, and I can't remember if it's Night Fever or Staying Alive that comes on as he busts out the door and leaves, and still has that big thematic impact. And this is in a cheesy 80s movie, if you understand what I'm saying. It's like,
right.
It just kind of works, you know? It's like, and even to this day, it kind of works, I think.
It's amazing they created this dramatic music. Did you ever hear their first album, the Bee Gees' first album?
I've heard like a bunch of the early songs, like the New York Mining Disaster and a lot of stuff from the early days. I don't know if it's the very first album.
The first album is like this incredible piece of sort of orchestral, sort of psychedelic Britpop that has no relationship.
No, it's great stuff. I mean, even the Andy Gibb stuff was really great too. I feel like and even the stuff like they did for like Barbra Streisand and the stuff they did for like Yvonne Elliman and all those people. It was just a period where like their writing ability and their production ability was really great. I mean, Marjorie, obviously, the strings and all that stuff, but just in general, and also even more so as far as influences go, when they were recording Saturday Night Fever, the drummer got food poisoning and had to go home, and they weren't done doing the record yet.
Right.
So they actually created a drum pattern off of, I believe it was, it's either Staying Alive was done, Night Fever wasn't done, and they created a drum loop off of Staying Alive that they used for Night Fever, and that was with the big tape machines. They had to put it all around the room and stuff. And
right.
I mean, that's a really big deal if you think about it, especially in context of what we do today. You know what I mean?
Right.
So
they're advancing in that way. Okay, another in a completely opposite direction, RZA.
RZA?
Yeah.
RZA, well RZA, I mean, the Wu-Tang Clan, obviously. It's just, they're really brilliant. First of all, obviously, I'm a fan of people who take the whole thing and put it into a concept and everything and really, but also just the pure energy and the way. See, RZA is weird because like people don't. When I say people, I guess I mean radio and whatever doesn't really embrace him as much as he's been a big stamp on culture, and like just the fact of the matter, like he scored like Ghost Dog and like is doing the stuff like the Kill Bill movies and stuff, and his music, not to mention his rhyme and everything else, is just really inventive, and like I always feel like as far as influences go, it's a big influence on me. not necessarily musically, even though I love the music, but more just like conceptually and just the attitude it takes to go make that.
It's kind of like people also who develop mythologies around their band, who like have a whole cosmology.
Yeah, exactly.
And it sort of started maybe with P-Funk or.
I mean, because also Riz is also an organizer in the sense of like, because the Wu-Tang Clan actually wasn't a group; it was a bunch of different people who he kind of brought together to be a group. You know what I mean? And if you understand, like, you get nine ghetto cats together, and you can organize that and make that happen, you know, you're on some shit. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
You really got to focus there. You know, and, like, I give him a lot of credit for like just the whole the concept, the idea, and just the strength of it.
And you also listed Law & Order SVU as an influence.
Well, I figure, like, you know, for me personally, it's like most stuff I learned, it's like from either The Simpsons or Law & Order. Like, that's how I get a lot of my knowledge and maybe my and so, like, you know, because when I work in the studio, a lot of times I'm by myself or maybe with a player or whatever. So when you're in a room that's really quiet and nothing's going on, it's kind of... For me, it's a little harder to concentrate, so I like to have a TV on and just kind of like keeps something in motion in the room. It keeps me more. I don't necessarily watch TV while I'm working, but it's kind of on, and that's they run those like every hour on USA or something at night. So like I can see a lot of those, and like it's kind of like you get familiar with the character, so it feels like you kind of like. But also, I just like the show. I think it's a good show. But
it is a well written show. I have one more question. Do you have a classic rock album that's like you do mix in a lot of rock? Do you have a single absolute like favorite
rock record? I don't know if I have a favorite rock record as far as albums go, but I have a lot of different songs I like.
Yeah.
Black Sabbath, Wall of Sleep. I like When the Levee Breaks, Led Zeppelin. And those are more heavy, but also like on the other side of like, I like.
sounds like Page and Plant shifting between the speakers on Hall
of Fame. But also when we're talking like rock, I take it more broad. Like I like Pet Sounds, The Beach Boys. It's kind of a rock record.
Yeah.
Like, a really important record.
Brian Wilson. I mean, that might be a production influence in a way.
Most definitely. I actually had to interview Brian Wilson. Well, we had to interview each other one time, but I didn't get much out of him. He was kind of like not in the super talkative state at the moment. this group called the Os Mutantes. It's just a lot of different. I mean, that's all.
That
period of rock.
Tropicalia group. Yeah.
And probably not the Rolling Stones specifically, but Sympathy for the Devil by the Rolling Stones. Because also the Goudard documentary on it. When you watch it make it, you see how it all gets put together.
Oh, yeah.
Just really, that's a big influence on me. I mean, there's millions of them. I mean.
Great. So what's next?
Very next is the Deltron record. We're trying to finish up right now. Probably, hopefully, be done by the end of December, maybe even a little earlier, but that'll be sometime next year. I've just been in the studio doing a couple mixes for a couple people. This band called The Killers. Another thing called, but Disney has reopened their archives to a bunch of the old songs from the old movies. And I just did a mix of something from The Jungle Book.
That ought to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. And then I'm working right now with this band and on this mix for this band as well. They're called Plus 44. It's Travis and Mark from Blink-182, and the record's coming out pretty soon, I think. And
cool. Now, does Disney contact you and say, hey, we're going to make these archives available. We want you to do a remix?
Yeah,
is that what happens?
Yeah. Huh. So not Walt. Yeah, Walt's not calling you up.
Back from the dead.
Walt hasn't been on Frozen.
Guess what I want you to do for me.
Yeah. And,
wake up, Walt.
So they're not, are they released to the public or no? Just to
I don't know what they're
going to
do with them.
People.
I think they're going to release them as a compilation of a couple of, I think like, you know, 12 different songs or 10 or whatever it is. I'm not really sure.
So are you doing the whole thing or
no,
different
song. Different people, yeah. And then probably what else am I doing? Those are the things that are on the board right now. But also Jamie Cullum, he's a kid I work with. I think we're going to start talking about doing some new stuff in the near future.
All right, man. We look forward to anything you put out, and I want to thank you for coming in and joining
us.
Cool. Thank you. Thanks for having
me. All right.
Love's the only weapon. Shit!
Are you serious?